Hello, good morning and welcome. My name is Graham and I'm delighted to be with you all today as we start these journeys into asking what it is to be really free. Free from constraints and conformity, free from constant testing and peer pressure, and free from unsafe and uninspiring school environments. Free to let children explore the world around them through play, cooperation and inspiration. Free to let children learn naturally, following their innate curiosity and endless creativity.
We come to see that learning isn't about doing well at school. It's about engaging with life.
I'll be here for you, and I will serve you, and I will carry your message around.
As many of us are faced with uncertainty of what the future may bring, some of us will be looking deeply about what sort of lifestyle we wish to nurture in these coming years. Where an income will come from, what sort of community do we wish to live in, and where the support and encouragement from like-minded families will be found, crucial in any homeschooling adventure. Equally, and perhaps more challenging, is the question of living healthily, being safe, and knowing where will our food come from and who will be growing it. To help us look at these exciting challenges, we welcome to the show celebrated author and homestead creator Ben Hewitt. Ben is the author of the eye-opening and always humorous ride Homegrown and the all-essential guide of celebrating soil and returning to the good life, the nourishing homestead. Ben has been featured on many publications, including NPR, about his unorthodox take on life and how much fun it has been to see his kids grow up in the woods. Ben knew from the age of 16 he wanted to live a more meaningful life, which drew him to the country, where he and his wife found the time and space needed to provide food and adventure for their family and become pillars in their local community. Ben knew they would have to work hard, overcome endless challenges, but at the same time never answer to a boss, learn through living, and get to raise their children surrounded by lessons of the natural world. This may sound a great undertaking for many, but Ben's frank and sympathetic approach to life allows his light to shine through, surely an inspiration for all. Ben's writings and general life outlook highlight the importance to develop close and honest relationship with our kids, to seek out mentors, advice, support and help at every step, and provide the time and encouragement for all the family to pursue their passions and live lives full of creativity and joy. So thank you so much for being here today, Ben.
Hey, thanks, Graham. It's great to be with you.
We just start these conversations here, just going back to your own school days. I know you have written a lot about this. Perhaps it formed your opinions and your lifestyle now. But when you dropped out at 16, did you ever feel you were missing out on anything? And was the choice to drop out mainly to pursue your own interests, or was school simply something that didn't interest you?
Well, to the latter points of that question, it was, I think, some of each. Definitely school was definitely not engaging to me, with rare a couple of exceptions, mostly classes that involve language and use of words. I've always really been fond of writing and language. So there were a couple of bright spots, and there were a couple of teachers who were real bright spots for me, but by and large school was not engaging. And there were other things I wanted to be doing. Primarily, you know, I'm always sort of keen to point out that I didn't really, it's not like I dropped out of school because I thought I was so smart that school couldn't really serve me, or that I wanted to pursue a degree in, astrophysics or something like that, and I just wasn't able to get what I needed from school. It was really much more, you know, a real sense of disinterest and disengagement, and also just sort of wanting to live my life in a very sort of simple and humble way. I mean, I left school and immediately started working on a construction crew, and picked up at least over the next couple of years, at least a rudimentary understanding of carpentry and building in the building trades, which has been actually a huge asset throughout my life. I'm by no means a terribly skilled carpenter, but the capacity, the ability to build our own house, which we've done twice now, has been a real enabling factor in our life. And I think you asked, so the first part of that question, you asked if I felt like I'm correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you asked, did I feel like I was, did I missed out by dropping out of school? Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Was there any subjects that perhaps you might have wanted to pursue a little further, or anything you feel you missed out? Perhaps your peers were involved in some activities you thought maybe you wanted to get involved in also?
I can't say that I've given it a lot of thought, to be honest. I mean, I sort of have the sense that, for better or worse, that was the path I took, you know. I have not, it's not something I have spent a lot of time dwelling on. It is sort of just how my life happened to unfold. It's the journey I've been on. I have thought about, at this stage of my life, I'm just turned 46 a couple of days ago. At this stage of my life, I am actually considering going back to school to get my master's, which is kind of an interesting and perhaps ironic twist in some ways. But so it's not like, you know, I think at the outset, I should be really clear here. It's like, I'm not, you know, anti-formalized education necessarily. I think there are many aspects, particularly when it comes to sort of primary and secondary education, and how children are incorporated into that system, that are really wanting. But I don't cast aspersions on formalized education in every circumstance or situation. I think there's a lot that actually can be gleaned from it. So that's just a little, I'm just sort of putting that out there as a little bit of a backdrop to everything that we're probably going to talk about over the next little bit here.
Yeah, sure. And what would you think of studying if you went back and did your master's?
Writing, for sure. And creative nonfiction writing specifically. And part of that is because I have been really fortunate enough to be able to do some teaching, even in the absence of a bachelor's. But there are limitations, and most schools do want you, if you're going to be anything more than teach the occasional class, they want you to have at the very least a master's in this day and age. So fortunately, actually, based on my publishing track record and my life experience, I have actually been accepted into a master's program without most of the normal formal educational pedigree. So it is an option for me at this point, if I can figure out the finances and the logistics of it, and it's something I'm sort of looking at.
Right, that sounds fascinating. Well, yes, and I'm definitely recommend everyone to pick up all of your books, especially Homegrown, which does take you into the family dynamic of everything that's involved in an unschooling life. And you're very honest about the amount of work involved in any sort of homestead there. Life's not always the picture that we want to paint of an idyllic lifestyle in the country, you know, eating your own food. It's a lot of hard work. And I know if you could take us back to when you decided to buy the farm, did you have a vision of how it could turn out? I know you're heavily involved in the community now, and was it more of something that just you had to really just learn as you went?
Yeah, definitely the latter. I think there were some very vague ideas that both Penny and I had regarding what we wanted out of our life. I mean, I remember thinking to myself, you know, it's really important to me to have a piece of property that I can walk out my front door and I can stand in my front lawn and pee if I want to, and there's nobody's going to bother me for doing that. You know, that level of like of privacy has always been really, really important to me. I'm actually a very extroverted social person, but I really need that place to sort of retreat to. So that was always important. Penny had much more of a sort of agricultural background. When I met her, she'd already been working on vegetable farms for a number of years. And so she had, I think, a more concrete idea of wanting to work with the land in a way that I sort of sounded vaguely appealing to me, but I didn't really understand necessarily what that was going to look or feel like. But I think for both of us, it really, I mean, no pun intended, but it just sort of happened organically. It one thing evolved into another. And, you know, honestly, at the time we bought our piece of land, I was really, really involved in competitive cycling, and I basically expended the overwhelming majority of my energy in pursuit of riding my bicycle as fast as possible, and just could not really fathom why anyone would spend their energy otherwise. And then that slowly transitioned as we started doing more stuff around our place. I just became more engaged and became more interested and really started to see the value in it. And it started to feel, you know, really purposeful to me and meaningful to me. And that has, I'm really grateful for the fact that that has continued to today.
Right, right. Did any of your other friends and family have any sort of input in your decision? Were there any fears raised by anyone?
Any fears, did you say?
Yeah, any fears raised in the idea of, you know, you're going to really try and build your own house and grow your own food. It might seem daunting to a lot of people. I just wanted, were your family and friends very supportive?
Yeah, super supportive. My parents were homesteaders back in the day. My dad had come out of suburban New Jersey in his mid-20s and really was part of the sort of late 60s and early 70s era back to the land movement in Vermont. And so they gave that up when I was about 6 years old, but they certainly understood the impetus behind it, the desire to live that way. And Penny's folks, who were much more sort of, what's the right word, led a more suburban sort of mainstream existence, I guess, for lack of a better term. They although they probably didn't really entirely understand what it is we were trying to accomplish or why would we'd be wanting to try to accomplish it this way. I think they really saw how important it was to us, and they have always been incredibly supportive. So we've been really fortunate from a family perspective to have a lot of support no one really saying you can't or shouldn't, which has been incredibly helpful. I'm sure there have been times when they've been skeptical. I don't doubt that at all, although they've been really respectful enough to not really express that and to just sort of, you know, be willing to sit back and watch us, make whatever mistakes we were going to make, of which there have been plenty, believe me. And, you know, friends-wise, like, you know, where we live, and one of the reasons we choose to live in this place is because what we are doing is not so radically different than what a lot of people are doing or some version of it. You know, I mean, no one's doing everything exactly the same, but there is still in Vermont, and I would say even particularly in northern Vermont, a real strong sort of land-based ethos, and no one really, you know, where you don't stick out all that much. And so there's a lot of support just, I guess, culturally and communally in this area.
Right, sure. That comes through in a lot of these talks, the need for community, especially on any sort of homeschooling or unschooling journey. I wonder, were you always planning to homeschool or unschool your children with the starting of the farm, or have you ever felt there was a need for any public schooling or curriculum, or have the boys simply always had that in their life, the unschooling philosophies?
I have a kind of complicated answer to that question. The first part of the answer is that yes, we were always planning to homeschool in some fashion or another. We did not, and I talk about this a lot in the book and in some other stuff that I've written, and we didn't necessarily expect it to take the course it's taken. We definitely had a more curriculum-based concept in mind, particularly around sort of a Waldorf-inspired curriculum. And that just proved basically to be a dismal failure. And that really, that the failure of that, and I don't mean that Waldorf is a failure, I just meant it, you know, trying to apply that to our family was a failure, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And that failure was what really sort of opened the door to a more sort of unschooling type of practice. And that has shifted, though. I mean, right now our older boy is 15, almost 16, and he has been taking advantage of the public school system part-time for the last couple of years and really enjoys it. We're fortunate that we live in a town where I'm going to get into some terminology that may not make sense to all of your listeners, but we have what's called school choice in this town because this town does not have a school of its own. So we're basically able to pick what we want from our schooling as long as we can provide transportation and the town will pay for it. So because he's really, really into music, He's able to attend, again, very part-time. It's a couple hours a day, a school that's not far from here that has a really, really excellent music program, and we take advantage of that. And we also have transitioned to doing some more slightly curriculum-based education at home, mostly around math, honestly, and a little bit of writing. And there is still the opportunity mostly for them to pursue their own interests. Our younger son is still at home full time. I think, you know, over the course of our experience with unschooling, how do I want to say this? I'll speak primarily for myself, although I think she would be fine with me saying this for her too. But it's been really important that we have challenged our own sort of assumptions and dogma, just as we often ask other parents to challenge their assumptions and dogma around education. And so some of our, I think, you know, it was not easy for us to say, you know, it looks, you know, it really seems like our older boy wants to be in school full, you know, part time. And that was a sort of challenging transition for us, because we had spent a lot of time with certain ideas about what their education was going to look like. And that was not one of them. And yet it's turned out to be a really great experience. So very valuable lesson. I think it's always a really valuable lesson to have your assumptions challenged. And that has been really valuable for us. And it's been a great experience for him. And I'm always really encouraging of parents, you know, who are embarking on this journey or who are in this journey, to just remember that, you know, unschooling, homeschooling, whatever you call it, you know, it doesn't have to look like anything specific. And I said this even before our boy started going to public school part-time. It's like, it doesn't have to look like anything specific. Don't be afraid if it seems like the right thing for your kid to take advantage of the public school system. You know, on the other hand, don't assume that that's what they need either. I think one of the great advantages and sort of blessings of this path is hopefully the opportunity to spend a lot of time with your kids and to really get to know your kids, and to really hopefully from that experience and that closeness, be able to be really honest about what it is they and you need from this experience.
Sure. And the idea that everything does change. And yeah, I know Isaac Morehouse gave us a really insightful reflection on that. You know, if you're thinking of homeschooling, we'll just try it for even if you try it for a few months or a year and it doesn't work out for you, fine, you know. And I love the idea of, yeah, mixing the freedoms on the farm, and then also being going to study some formal music. That sounds great. Yes. I don't know, you have
But people get so petrified that, you know, if they step away from it for whatever it is they're doing, you know, people I think who are homeschooling or unschooling, they get scared if they step away from that for a period of time that everything's going to go to pot, you know, and kids, parents whose children are in school are afraid that, oh my gosh, if I pull my kid out for a semester, you know, they're going to fall hopelessly behind. I mean, neither is true on either side of the fence. You know, there just doesn't need to be that really sort of rigid dichotomy, I think, between all these different options that are out there.
I know you have also written on the subject of mentors. I was wondering if you might be able to take us through a couple of examples where you've used these with your son's learning and how important you see them.
Yeah, I mean, I would be impossible for me to overstate the value, the role, and also the gratitude that we have for the people who have extended themselves that way. It's almost overwhelming to me to think about like how generous, you know, people have been and how fortunate we are. And so we actually still, there's a mentor who has been working, spending time with our boys for, going on 10 years now. He started spending time with our older son, and then Finn, our older boy, started, you know, sort of developing these other interests, and then he started spending time with our younger son, and he still comes once a week, and they spend the day together, usually outdoors doing something, sometimes doing some kind of art-related project. You know, they go fishing, or they go foraging, or they go hunting, or they do something in, you know, indoors. And that, you know, his presence in our life is It's really, really hard to even imagine where we would be. It's hard to express. Obviously, I'm struggling to express like how deeply grateful I am and how amazing it's been. So I'll just leave it at that. And then there's another mentor who has played a huge role. There's more than one other, but one other one that I'm thinking of is someone who actually spent time with us, living with us, a summer about 4 or 5 years ago now. And he spent a lot of time with the boys. He has since moved to Minnesota, but the boys are still in touch with him and still go out to visit every summer and spend time with him. And actually our younger son is very much hoping that next year he will be allowed to go out and spend a significant chunk of time with him and his girlfriend, like a month or more. He lives a very sort of unique, truly, I guess, sort of back to the land lifestyle, and that he does very little agriculture and finds forages and gleans most of his food from the wild landscape. So it's a really, it's a really amazing experience for the boys to spend time with him. It's a very, very, even more radically different approach to supporting yourself in contemporary America than what we are doing here.
Wow, that sounds fantastic. Are these people you just met in your local community? Or?
Yeah, they are. They are. I mean, they both are people that we proactively sought out, I will say. And the first one I spoke of is somebody that we had sought out with a group of other kids originally, and he was mentoring this group, and then the group sort of disbanded, but we sort of maintained a relationship with him, and now he's become just, an incredibly close family friend in addition to a mentor to the boys. And then the second one I spoke of is someone we had originally sought out when it became clear to us that our boys' interest in sort of hunting and trapping and sort of those kind of skills was not sort of a passing phase. These are things that we really had very little experience with, and we sought long and hard to find someone who would take them under his or her wing, so to speak, and show them sort of a ways to go about these practices that were, we felt really comfortable with just from sort of an ethical standpoint. Someone who was really seeking to offer that kind of reverence back to the land and the animals who, used every last bit of the animals they harvested. That sort of experience was what we were looking for. We weren't really, we wanted very much not to necessarily connect them with someone who was just into sort of hunting or trapping to collect trophies, so to speak. That's how we came to know the other person. And just like the first mentor I spoke of, he's become very, we're very, very close to him as a family, and the boys have maintained this amazing connection with him, even across now 1,500 miles or so.
Yeah, it does seem like that would be a really strong bond that's probably going to last a lifetime. So yeah, that's great to reflect on. Another insight I took away from Homegrown, the book we discussed, is the idea. Well, I'll just read your writing on it. It's unschooling is not easy or convenient. Encouraging our sons to think critically is one of the most important aspects of their education, and is the one that foments the most conflict. I'd love for you to just perhaps expand on that and your reflections now, and perhaps how maybe your sons have taught you in aspects of patience and presence.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I think, patience and presence are something hopefully that expands in every family when children come in to the picture. Maybe not always, but I think most parents have that experience, or new parents have that experience. I can't say this for sure because I don't know an alternate path, but I strongly suspect that the path that we've taken, which has involved having our sons around, just sort of in our company more than is perhaps typical in contemporary America, and involves us being, sort of incorporating them into our life in sort of a meaningful way, in the sense that, you know, actually right before we got on the phone, I was out with my older boy and we were running boards through the planer for a floor I'm putting down. And so like, that's just a very sort of off the cuff example of the ways in which, you know, we're sort of constantly working with our kids. And the point I guess I'm trying to make is, you know, when you're spending that much time with somebody, whether it's a romantic life partner or a business partner or a child, it requires a lot of patience. Maybe particularly so of a child, someone who you're really trying to cultivate or help cultivate skills and resourcefulness in. I think one point that's worth making is that unschooling, I mean, one of the great benefits of unschooling is that it, and homeschooling in general, is that it can look like a million different things to a million different families. And so while I know that some families choose a much lighter facilitation, I guess there's perhaps even more freedom for their kids to do whatever it is they want. They don't necessarily ask a whole lot of their kids. That's not really been our path. And so even though we have really allowed them to sort of pursue their interests and just chart the course of what it is that they really want to do, there is a pretty high level of expectation from them. And there is a lot of facilitation and a lot of engagement. And so for us anyway, I would say that it would honestly in some ways be far easier to just sort of like put them on the bus and send them to school. And so I think, and I bring this all up because I think sometimes people hear a term like unschooling and they just sort of assume that our kids have absolute autonomy and freedom to do whatever it is they want any minute of the day. And that's emphatically not the case. We do build in a lot of that time. That is really important to us. But they definitely have a pretty high level of expectation, and we definitely take it upon ourselves to facilitate their interests and find opportunities for them and expect them to do the same, particularly as they have gotten older.
Sure. Yeah, no, it sounds like a really balanced approach. We've covered so much in a short talk here, Ben. Thank you so much for your time. I know you're very busy up there. So just to end up, I was wondering if you might be able to offer any words of wisdom for families that might be inspired by your journey. Perhaps the idea of paying bills and buying food from a supermarket is not the path they want to pursue. They might think 40 acres is perhaps a little bit more of an undertaking than they want. But anyone that's maybe looking for a more self-sustained lifestyle, and also that concept that being self-sustained, really, I know you go into it, that it's not something that can really exist because we're so connected on so many levels.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that you threw that in there because I don't even really, you know, I'm not even really all that fond of the term of sort of like, you know, self-sustaining. I don't even want that in my life, honestly. I really want to be part of a community, an interdependent community. That's really, really important to me. So I love to disabuse the idea of sort of this, you know, the self-sufficient homestead. I just don't think it doesn't, you're totally right. It doesn't really exist. And I don't, even if it could exist, I can't imagine it would be all that rewarding ultimately, unless you're just a total introvert and really don't like other people. You know, in terms of advice, I mean, it's such a tricky one because people are coming from so many different places in their lives. And I guess one thing I would say is that it's definitely not all or nothing. I think it can be really daunting to, you know, look at what we're doing or what other families are doing and think, oh my God, how do I get from here to, I don't know, raising 90% of my food and building my own house and homeschooling my kids. And, you know, it doesn't have to be that. I think anyone can take pieces of this life and incorporate it into their own. And I will also I'm also really keen to point out to people that our life isn't perfect. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's really easy, I think, to be on the outside looking in at anybody's life and say, wow, that's so amazing. That's just what I want. You know, we have plenty of our own struggles. We have struggles around our parenting. We have struggles around our you know, relationship as a family and sometimes in the community with, you know, I just want to be really careful, not just that no one sort of holds us up or anyone up. I think it's really, really dangerous to hold anyone up as sort of this like idyllic model that they're striving for, you know? And to be really honest, that it's whatever path you take, you're going to have struggles. It's just a question of sort of prioritizing, I guess, which struggles you want to take on, you know? So we have chosen a path that requires us to do a lot of physical labor and a lot of work. Most of the time that's meaningful. Sometimes it friggin' sucks, honestly, right? We have chosen a path that gives us a lot of freedom and flexibility in one way, but, you know, from a financial standpoint, sometimes it's really, really difficult. So I just want to, yeah, I'm just wanting to be really, really honest about that.
Yeah, that's definitely something that comes through in all of your writings. Yeah, very honest and frank account of what it is to be involved in any homeschooling journey. So thank you once again, Ben. If people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
Probably the best way is they can always find me through my blog, which is you can either look up Lazy Mill Hill Farm or you can go to benhewitt.net. And that is probably the best way if they want to, you know, read more of my work. I post there semi-regularly anyway. And we have an Instagram. I don't know, what is it called? Is it a feed or an account? I'm not even sure, but it's Lazy Mill Hill Farm if anyone's interested, and they can link it through the blog. And that's, you know, that's a place where they can certainly get a little more insight into what our lives look like on a day-to-day basis. And I am happy to communicate with people if they want to email me through my blog. I will almost always, and actually really pretty much always will reply.
I hope you got as much out of that talk as I did. An excellent introduction to where we are now and where we could be. Please check your inbox. We'll be back in touch very shortly for much more inspiration for you to start your journey into homeschooling, child-led learning, and liberty. If you know of any families looking for alternatives to school, please give them our information, homeschoolingandliberty.com, and they are more than welcome to join us on this journey. We'll see you real soon. Cheers.
Yeah, new earth is beckoning now, calling us with this new song. Yeah, you gotta listen what it has to say. It will guide you along. Yeah, you gotta put yourself first every time, and she will catch you when you fall. Yeah, you gotta love yourself from within. Love yourself till you're full. Yeah, yeah. You gotta take the power back.
Ask yourself this question: what is so amazing and wonderful at government-run schools that you would send your children there to be taught by essentially strangers, a curriculum over which you have no authority or control? How would you like to be a part of your children's learning? You were a part of your children's learning as colors, how she ties her shoes, what is a butterfly, why mommy loves her. Why would you not want to continue to be a part of that?
Look at what you've been told for so long that you have to say, well, maybe they're not right and maybe your instincts are right. Unlearn those things.
This is about human rights and endowing children with dignity and agency and autonomy. And then guess what? As a side benefit, it works.